If you want to do something, cut that pan of bar cookies on the counter. You baked bar cookies in 15 minutes? Hannah asked, clearly astounded. Of course not. I baked them this morning before you got up, and stuck them in the refrigerator in case we needed a dessert for tonight. And you think we need a dessert after that huge meal? Yes, definitely. I don't know about you, but an orange cut up in fancy pieces just doesn't do it for me. Are you ready? Norman asked, standing by the cat carrier, his hand on the grate. I'm ready, Hannah said. Me too, Michelle added. Moisha confirmed it. Okay, she's going to come out like a rocket. Here goes. Norman was right. Cuddles shot out of the crate like a circus clown shot out of a cannon. The first thing she did was make a sharp right and race down the hallway with Moisha in close pursuit. Where are they going? Michelle asked. Hannah laughed. Probably to the bedroom, where they'll launch themselves up to my bed, congratulate each other for startling us, burn what we used to call a wheelie in high school, hop down again, and sprint back here. You're probably right, Norman said quickly. I think I just heard them hit the floor again. Head for the couches and feet up, quick! Hannah, Michelle, and Norman made a beeline for the sofas and got their feet up just a split second before the two cats came roaring through the living room. Okay, Michelle said. Let's get to work making those... She paused and stared at Hannah and Norman. Why are you two shaking your heads? Norman and I have seen this game more than you have, Hannah told her. We figured out the pattern, and the cats always do this 3 times. Oh, Michelle said, lifting her feet again. But I don't hear any... She stopped speaking again and gave a little nod. Yes, I do. They just jump down from your bed. When the second race was over, Hannah got up and hurried to the kitchen for the treat canister. She got back just in time to watch the third race. When it was over, both cats jumped up on the back of the couch and watched while Hannah took the lid off the small canister. That was a good show, she told them, placing an equal number of treats in front of each cat. Then she turned to Norman and Michelle. If we're right about the number of races, it should be over now, and that means that we can get to work. Fueled by strong coffee and an occasional lovely lemon bar cookie, they made calls to each of the hospitals on Norman's list. He'd also made another list of rehabilitation and physical therapy facilities attached to hospitals, and Hannah called those. Since Norman had numbered his initial list, he took the even numbers and Michelle took the odd. They worked until they'd called every place on both lists, and then they just sat there and looked at each other in consternation. "She's not there," Norman said, telling them what they already knew. "That's right, unless she checked in under her married name," Michelle said. "We can check for that," Norman said. "What was her married name?" "We don't know," Hannah told him. "We might be able to find out tomorrow, but we've done all we can for tonight." "Thank you for helping us tonight, Norman. And thanks for dinner. It was fun." "Yes, it was," Michelle agreed.
"I thought so, too. We'll have to do it again instead of always getting takeout." Norman got up. "I'd better let you two get some sleep."
Norman was just getting ready to put Cuddles in her kitty carrier and leave when Michelle's cell phone rang. She reached out to answer it, listened for a moment, and then she put out a hand to stop him. "Don't leave yet," she said. "This is important." There was no way either Hannah or Norman could figure out who Michelle's caller was, or the subject of the call, from Michelle's side of the conversation. It consisted of yes, no, not really, and I'll check. When Michelle got off the phone, Hannah could contain her curiosity no longer. "Who was that?" she asked. "The lady on night shift at the Superior Storage Facility that I called. The one close to my campus? She said I spoke to someone new, but the woman had written everything down. June, the supervisor I talked to tonight, was going over the new employee's work, and she found the record of my phone call. She checked the list of rental units for the name Ross Barton.
And it wasn't there, but there was a name that was very similar.
What was the name? Norman asked.
Russ Burton.
Norman looked hopeful. That's pretty close.
That's what she thought. And then she told me that they were about to put the contents up for auction because the rent was 3 months in arrears. And she said that if we wanted to come there to look at the contents, that would be fine with her.
And it's Unit 312? Hannah asked.
No, but the contents could still belong to Ross. I think we should go and take a look.
Chapter 29. Hannah sat in the front seat of Norman's car, clutching a thermos of coffee.
More coffee, Norman?
No, thanks. I'll wait until we stop for breakfast. We have an hour to eat. June doesn't get to work until 9.
I wonder how everyone's doing down at the cookie jar, Michelle said from the back seat. Lisa said that Marge and Aunt Nancy were going to meet her there at 4 to do the baking.
That's right. And then Marge and Jack will handle the customers at the cookie jar while Lisa and Aunt Nancy take care of the booth at the convention.
I hope they can handle all that, Michelle said, sounding a bit worried.
I'm sure they can, Hannah said, but she began to feel guilty at taking the day off. She'd have to make it up to them somehow. We should have met them there at 4. We could have helped with the baking.
Stop feeling guilty, Michelle told her. Aunt Nancy said she was looking forward to it. And we'll be back early and we can help out. We can even bake more cookies if they run short.
But I could have gotten up an hour earlier, Hannah argued. No, Norman said firmly. You need your sleep, Hannah.
Not as much as Michelle. She thought a yard light was the sun.
You promised you wouldn't say anything about that.
Oops. Sorry about that, but it was so funny I had to tell Norman. They rode in silence for several miles, and then Norman cleared his throat. Seriously, Hannah, I meant what I said about getting more sleep. You have to keep your mind sharp to solve PK's murder. Both Mike and Lonnie said they weren't getting anywhere.
Neither are we. The only lead we have is Gary, and that's really tentative.
But he lied, Norman pointed out.
Maybe not if Violet used her married name. And lying about his sister and the hospital doesn't really make him an automatic suspect. People lie, and you can't prosecute them for lying unless it's under oath. We need a lot more than lying to link Gary to the murder case.
Maybe we can get more tomorrow, Michelle said. You know, bring things up in casual conversation and hear what he has to say.
Yes, it has to be tomorrow. We've only got one more day with Gary, Norman said, turning off the interstate and taking the exit road. This is right, isn't it, Michelle?
Yes, Michelle told him, and there was a big smile on her face. I'm going to have a Reuben omelet. They're really good here. Or maybe I'll have the chopped liver and corned beef on rye. And afterwards, I'm going to buy a loaf of rye to take home with us. It's the best I've ever tasted.
55 minutes later, they were walking back to Norman's car. They were heavier than they'd been walking into the deli, but it wasn't entirely from the huge breakfasts they'd consumed. Norman was carrying 2 bags, Hannah was carrying 1, and Michelle was carrying 3. They'd walked past the strategically placed deli section on their way out, and the delicious scents coming from the long, refrigerated glass case had prompted them to buy even more. Then they'd passed the bakery section, which had sung a siren song to Hannah. She had 6 chocolate rugelach, 4 different kinds of hamantaschen, some mandelbread, and a loaf of egg challah. She also had a container of chopped liver, a container of fish salad, a 1/2 pound of sliced corned beef, 1/2 pound of lox, and 2 huge containers of pickles, 1 half sour and the other sour. The Superior Storage Building wasn't far from the deli, and they pulled up in the parking lot at 9:05. They sat there for a moment, still digesting their breakfasts, and then Norman opened his car door. "Let's go see that unit," he said.
"We're ready," Hannah told him.
and since she knew that Norman always opened the car door for her, she waited until he walked around the back of his car and opened her door and Michelle's door. The small rental office was clean and bright. There was an older woman with short brown hair sitting at a desk, and Norman walked up to her. "Are you June?" he asked.
"Yes," June smiled as she spotted Michelle and Hannah. "You came to see the Russell Burton storage unit, right?"
"Right," Hannah said.
"The unit isn't far from the office. I'll show you where it is."
They followed June past several large buildings. She stopped at another building that was identical to the others and pointed to the door.
"All the units in this building are inside units."
"You have units that are outside?" Norman asked.
"I know what you're thinking, so let me explain," June said. "All the units are inside units, but the door to an outside unit is a big aluminum door that rolls up. It's wide enough for large items like cars and boats."
June opened the door to one of the buildings, switched on a bank of lights, and led the way down a wide hallway to a door.
"Here it is," she said.
She chose a key on the ring she carried, unlocked the padlock, and opened the door.
"There you go," she said. "You can't go in and touch anything, but take a look and see if these are your husband's things."
Hannah stood just outside the open door and stared at the things that were stored inside. "It looks like everything is in cases of some sort," she turned to Norman. "I see a few that look like camera cases. Am I right?"
"Yes. I'm not sure what's in the larger suitcase-like cases, but they could be some sort of video equipment."
"You're welcome to go in and look if you're willing to pay the back rent," June told them.
"I'm willing," Hannah told her. "My husband studied photography and filmmaking in college, so these things could be his.
I'll definitely pay the back rent." "But you didn't even ask how much the rental is," Michelle pointed out.
"It's okay, Michelle," Norman reassured her. "I'm sure it's worth it."
"The back rent isn't that expensive," June told them. "This unit was rented 5 years ago when this facility first opened, and they had a special deal for anyone who rented in the first month. The original rent remains the same for the first 5 years, and then it goes up to the current rent. This particular unit is only $45 a month."
"That's fine with me," Hannah told June. "And I saw some trucks parked outside. You rent them, don't you?"
"Yes. We're partners with a national chain. You can rent a truck and drop it off at any of the approved locations."
"I don't suppose there's an approved location in Lake Eden, Minnesota," Norman said.
"As a matter of fact, there is. We just opened a branch office out by the community college. You could rent a small truck here and drop it off there if you'd like."
"We'd like to do that," Norman told her. "I'll rent the truck."
"Then let's go to the office and take care of the paperwork," June told him.
"Thank you, June," Hannah said as June locked up the unit again and they all followed her to the door.
"Okay, then," June led the way back to the office. "Who's going to drive the rental truck? I'll need a driver's license."
"I am," Norman said, and then he turned back to Hannah and Michelle.
"Who's going to drive my car?"
"I will," Michelle volunteered.
"Hannah can ride with you in the truck. And don't worry, Norman, I'm a good driver. One of my former roommates had a car just like yours, and I used to drive it all the time."
The arrangements with June at the rental office were made very quickly. She handed Hannah a key to the unit and gave Norman the truck keys. Norman, Hannah, and Michelle drove the truck down to the building that contained the rental unit and worked together to load the contents. Since everything was already packed in cases and boxes, it didn't take long, and within 30 minutes the truck was loaded and ready to go. "I'm not sure where I'm going to put all this," Hannah confessed, looking at the contents in the back of the truck.
"I can store it at my place," Norman offered. "I've been doing some work on the house, and I enlarged the garage. It's heated now, and there's plenty of storage."
Hannah drew a relieved breath. "Thanks, Norman. I don't think the storage above my parking spots would hold it all."
"I know it wouldn't," Michelle told her. "I tried to put my suitcase up there, and it wouldn't fit."
Norman turned to Michelle.
"Then we'll all meet at my place," And once we unload, you can drive my car to the rental office by the college. We'll drop off the truck, and then I'll take you two back to the cookie jar.
Sooner than they expected, Norman turned into his driveway and pulled the truck up to the garage.
We can store all this equipment in the annex I built out here.
Hannah stared at the garage in surprise. You really enlarged this garage.
Yes, it's triple the size it used to be. I'm planning to make several guest rooms on one side, and we'll use one of those as a storage place for now.
The unpacking didn't take long, and then Hannah and Michelle followed Norman to the truck rental place so that Norman could drop off the truck. While they waited for him to finish at the truck rental office, Michelle called Marge at the cookie jar to see if they needed to bake more cookies.
Marge says no, they have enough, she reported to Hannah.
At the convention booth, too?
Yes. Marge checked with Lisa, and she said they had plenty.
It didn't take long for Norman to finish at the truck rental office.
Do you have to go back to the cookie jar? He asked them.
Not today, Hannah replied. You can take us back to the condo.
Dinner tonight? He asked them.
Yes, but we'll cook, Hannah answered.
You took us out last night, and it's our turn.
Aren't you tired after loading and unloading the truck?
Michelle shook her head.
Are you kidding? Today's a short day for us.
But I can take you out tonight, too.
No, Norman, Hannah told him. You've done enough for us today. We want to make dinner for you.
Yes, we do, Michelle agreed. Just take us back to the condo, drop us off, and come back at 7 for dinner, and bring Cuddles with you.
This is almost like old times, Hannah thought as she climbed the covered staircase with Michelle. Dinner with Norman, and Mike is bound to show up with Lonnie. All we have to do is figure out what to make. She did a mental inventory of the supplies she had in the freezer and began to smile.
How does chicken paprikash sound to you?
It sounds great. I love your chicken paprikash, and I can bake something easy for dessert.
Chapter 30. As they climbed the covered staircase past her living room window, Hannah glanced into her living room. No Moisha. But perhaps he was waiting by the door to greet them by jumping up into her arms.
You or me? Michelle asked her when they reached the second floor landing.
I'll catch him this time, Hannah answered, bracing herself as Michelle unlocked the door and pushed it open.
The expected feline missile did not launch and land in Hannah's arms. There was no sound of rushing feet, and no orange and white blur as Moisha went airborne. Hannah sighed. Moisha was probably sleeping again, and as they went inside and shut the door behind them, she wished she knew why he was always so tired. As they stepped into the living room, Hannah heard a whining noise.
What's that? She asked Michelle.
I don't know, but it sounds like it's coming from my room.
For a moment, Hannah was puzzled, but then she realized that they were home much earlier than they usually were, and the robo-vac was still vacuuming the wall-to-wall carpeting.
It's the robo-vac, she told Michelle.
I've never seen it operate, Michelle replied. Let's go look.
Hannah led the way as they walked down the hallway to watch her new vacuum do its job. They looked in the open guest room door, and the sight they saw both amazed and amused them. The robo-vac was whirring away, twisting and turning around the furniture in the guest bedroom. And right behind the robotic vacuum was Moisha. The hair was bristled on his back, and his ears were flat against his head. The vacuum turned, and Moisha leaped back, startled. He gave the round case a swipe with his paw, but it didn't stop moving. Instead, it turned again, and Moisha reacted again. Then the robo-vac moved toward Moisha, and Moisha sprang out of the way as it headed toward the door. Hannah and Michelle stepped aside and left the room.
So that's why you're so tired, Hannah said, startling her feline roommate even more than the robo-vac had. Come here, Moisha. I'll pick you up, and Michelle will go get the kitty treats.
Contrary to his usual reaction to that invitation, Moshe walked past them as if they were invisible and followed the Robovac down the hallway, stalking it as it made its way back to the living room. Only when the vacuum had gone back to its corner and shut itself off did Moshe rush back to them. "Just wait until I tell Norman and Mike about this," Hannah said as she picked Moshe up and carried him to his favorite spot on the back of the couch. "I'll bet that Cuddles stalks Norman's Robovac, too." Dinner was tasty, and just as Hannah had expected, Mike and Lonnie arrived shortly before they were ready to sit down to eat. Hannah had already told Norman about watching Moshe stalk the Robovac, and he'd laughed and promised to set both of their machines on a schedule that wouldn't exhaust their pets.
"This is really good,"
Mike said as he took a third helping from the slow cooker crock in the center of the table.
"I'm glad we dropped by."
"Michelle and I knew that you would if your food dar was working," Hannah told him. "By the way, we found out that Ross had a storage unit at the Superior Storage location in St. Paul." Mike dropped his fork with a clatter, even though he'd barely begun to eat his third helping.
"But you gave me the key. How did you get in?"
"The rent was 3 months in arrears, so all we had to do was pay the back rent and the manager let us in," Norman told him.
"They're not supposed to do that unless..." "Was the unit in Ross's name?"
"Not exactly," Michelle explained, "but the manager thought it was close enough. The name on the application was Russ Burton."
"You lucked out," Mike said. "The manager must have thought that someone got the name wrong."
"That's exactly what she thought," Hannah said. "She said they'd hired a part-time worker to type the names of the tenants in the computer when they'd switched over to a new system, and the worker must have misread the name on the application."
"Amazing," Mike said, shaking his head in disbelief. "She shouldn't have done that, you know."
"I know. But it turned out that the things stored inside did belong to Ross. I recognized a couple of the luggage tags that Ross's fiancée made for him while we were in college."
"And the unit was number 312? Mike asked Hannah.
"No. It was in the building marked 500, and the unit was 520. Everything inside was from our college years. Ross must have rented it after he graduated and moved out of the apartment building. The manager told us the unit was rented almost 5 years ago."
"Did you leave the stuff there?" Mike asked.
"No," Norman told him. "Hannah paid the back rent on the unit, and we got a small truck to move everything into my garage."
"Is there anything interesting there?" Mike asked Hannah.
"I don't think there's anything personal, if that's what you mean. Everything was in cases, and it all looked like camera or video equipment."
"I don't suppose you talked your way into checking Unit 312, Mike said.
"No, she wouldn't have let us do that," Hannah told him.
"Okay, then. Here's what I'm going to do. We're not going to bother going through those cameras and equipment right now, and I'll give the guys out there one more day to come up with something. Then I'm going to pull them back here and give them another assignment. Rick's good at interviewing people, and they can do some legwork for us."
Hannah's sleep was deep and peaceful. No problems plagued her, and no nightmares haunted her night. She woke up in the morning without the alarm, cuddled with Moshe for a moment or two, shut off the alarm so that it wouldn't ring while she was in the shower, and got out of bed to begin her morning ritual. 15 minutes later, when she came out of the shower, she smelled the tantalizing aroma of freshly brewed coffee, and she dressed as quickly as she could. Michelle was up early, too, and she'd put on their morning coffee. No mouth-watering baking scents were in the air, probably because they'd told Norman that they'd meet him early at the Lake Eden Inn to take advantage of Sally's excellent breakfast buffet. When Hannah walked down the hallway, Moshe at her heels, she felt better than she had in a long time. She was actually looking forward to the day and the work that awaited them. Selling cookies wasn't work, it was fun, and baking was always enjoyable. "Good morning, Michelle," Hannah greeted her sister as she stepped into the kitchen. "How are you today?" Michelle smiled. I'm fine, and you look a whole lot better than you have in a while. I guess some time away from work restored your positive attitude.
Hannah poured herself a cup of coffee and thought about that. Michelle was right. She'd lost her positive attitude when she'd lost Ross. She hadn't realized that his disappearance had affected her personality as deeply as it had.
The winter sky was just beginning to lighten slightly as Hannah drove to town. Marge, Aunt Nancy, and Lisa were already at the cookie jar, and Michelle was just parking when Hannah pulled into her spot. Hannah was smiling as she met Michelle at her car, and they walked in the back kitchen door together. With all five of them working, the baking would be done in record time.
"Hannah, do you have a minute before we start packing up the cookie truck?"
Aunt Nancy asked her.
"Sure. What is it?"
"Not here. I don't want Marge or Lisa to hear. I'll go in the coffee shop. Do you think you can follow me in a couple of minutes without them noticing?"
"Let's try it. Go ahead, Aunt Nancy, and give me a minute or two to follow you."
"What's going on?" Michelle asked Hannah when Aunt Nancy had left.
"Aunt Nancy wants to speak with me personally in the coffee shop. Could you distract Marge and Lisa so they don't miss us while we're talking?"
"I can do that. Just watch."
Hannah watched as Michelle picked up a tray of unbaked cookies and headed toward the oven where Lisa and Marge were standing.
"Oh, no!"
Michelle exclaimed as she pretended to stumble, and the unbaked cookies went flying all over the counter.
"I'm so sorry. I just lost my balance for a second."
"That's okay, honey," Marge said, hurrying over to help Michelle. "You go sit down and catch your breath. There's no harm done. Isn't that right, Lisa?"
"Marge is right," Lisa agreed. "None of the cookies hit the floor, so they're perfectly usable. You just sit and relax. Marge and I will reshape the dough and put it back on the cookie sheet."
Hannah reminded herself to compliment Michelle on her quick thinking and made her escape through the swinging door to the coffee shop. Aunt Nancy was sitting at a table near the plate glass window, and she motioned Hannah over to her.
"It's Haiti,"
Aunt Nancy said as soon as Hannah sat down with her.
"I think he's going to give me an engagement ring."
Hannah was puzzled. "But that's good, isn't it?"
"Oh, yes. It's wonderful. But I think that Lisa might feel hurt if I don't confide my suspicions to her."
Hannah smiled. "That's easily solved. All you have to do is tell Lisa."
"But what if I'm wrong? Haiti said something about good things coming in small packages, and I know he went out to the jewelry store at the Tri-County Mall. If he's giving me a necklace or a bracelet instead of a ring, I'll be horribly embarrassed."
"She's making a mountain out of a beaver dam," Hannah thought. It had been one of her father's favorite sayings, but she didn't repeat it aloud. Instead, she said, "Just act surprised at whatever it is, and don't let Lisa and Herb know that you expected anything else." Aunt Nancy thought about that for a moment.
"You're right. I shouldn't tell them unless I know for sure. And I don't."
"Then you solved your own problem, Aunt Nancy." Aunt Nancy thought about that for a moment, and then she smiled.
"I did, didn't I?"
Hannah stood up. "We'd better get back to work before anyone misses us. And if they notice that we were gone, we'll just say we were checking to make sure everything was ready in here." "And Aunt Nancy?"
"Yes, Hannah?"
"Haiti's a wonderful man, and I really hope that you're right."
Chapter 31. It seemed that everyone and their cousin had turned out for the final day of Sally's holiday gift convention. From their vantage point in the center of the convention hall, Hannah, Michelle, and Norman could tell that every booth was doing booming business. The cookie jar booth was no exception. Norman had driven back to town twice to pick up more cookies. Now, at 4 p.m, their supply was getting low again.
"Do you want me to go to town again?" Norman asked them.
"No," Hannah made an executive decision. "It'll take you 20 minutes to get to town and 20 minutes to drive back here. By that time, it'll be almost 4:45, and the convention closes at 5.
"You're right," Norman agreed, "but I hate to see you run out."
Michelle smiled. And it was the smile that Dolores described as the cat that got into the cream pot in the Regency romances she wrote.
"We won't run out," she said.
"How can you be sure?" Hannah asked her.
"I stuck 4 pans of bar cookies in a cooler in the back seat of your cookie truck. I decided to bring them, just in case."
"That was a wise decision," Norman complimented her. "It certainly was." Hannah headed toward the chair in the back of the booth to grab her parka.
"I need some fresh air. I'll go get them."
As she passed by Gary's booth, Hannah stopped to say hello. "We're almost sold out. How are you doing today?" "It's the same here. I just sold my last handmade sleigh ornament, and everything else is in short supply. Today was my best day."
"I'm sorry to hear that you're out of the sleighs," Hannah told him. "I was going to buy one for Mother for her Christmas tree."
"I have another box, but it's in the passenger seat of my Jeep," Gary told her. "I was going to go out to get it earlier, but I got busy before I could do it, and I haven't had time since."
"I'm going out there anyway," Hannah told him. "I can bring the box back for you."
"That would be great," Gary said, reaching in his pocket to pull out his car keys and hand them to her. "Use the driver's side door. The lock on the passenger's door doesn't work very well in the winter. It's the black Jeep Wrangler with a small trailer hitched to the back."
"I know which one it is. I'm parked right next to it. I'll bring back your sleighs if you'll sell me one."
"I'll give you one," Gary promised, turning to smile at the customers who were approaching his booth. "Thanks, Hannah."
"No problem," Hannah said, leaving him to his customers.
She walked down the row of booths to the back door, waving at the vendors she'd met. The back door was unlocked, and she pushed it open and stepped outside, breathing deeply of the still, cold air. She coughed once, and immediately held her winter scarf over her mouth, breathing through that to warm the air slightly. The temperature outside was so cold that taking a deep breath hurt her lungs. Hannah unlocked the driver's side of the Jeep, pulled it open, and spotted the small box on the passenger's seat. It had the word "sleighs" written on the side, and she leaned across the driver's seat to lift it out. There was a styrofoam cup of coffee in the cup holder between the seats, but Hannah didn't notice that as she lifted the box and pulled it toward her. The corner of the box hit the cup, which contained only an inch or two of coffee in the bottom. The impact caused the cup to come out of the holder and upend, splashing the cold coffee all over the tan leather covering the driver's seat. "Oh, great," Hannah said sarcastically, setting the ornament box on the roof of the Jeep and reaching across the seat to open the glove box. It was where most people stored tissues, paper napkins, or rags, and she rummaged for something she could use to dry the seat. There was a box of tissues, and Hannah grabbed the box, placed it on the passenger's seat, and pulled out several tissues. She used them to wipe up the spill, and was about to replace the box in the glove box when she noticed that the interior of the glove box was a vivid shade of pink. "Pink!" Hannah gasped, completely startled by the color. Gary's Jeep was black. Why was the interior of his glove box pink? "It was a great paint job, Hannah. They even painted the inside of the glove box and the wheel wells." Cyril's words, describing Pinky's Jeep, came back to Hannah. This was Pinky's Jeep. There was no doubt about that. She had to ask Gary where he'd bought his Jeep. Hannah remembered her promise to Mike. She'd promised to notify him if she came across an important clue. She took out her phone and snapped a photo of the interior of the glove box before she closed it again. "Better check the wheel wells," her mind told her. "That's even more proof that it's Pinky's Jeep." It was a good idea, and Hannah shut the door of the Jeep, locking the door behind her. She crouched down as far as she could near the driver's side wheel well and held her cell phone out to snap another photo. One glance at her photo told her that it was even more proof that Gary's Jeep had once belonged to Pinky. Hannah was smiling as she typed a text message to Mike. "My neighbor at the convention, Gary Fowler, owns Pinky's Jeep."
Then she attached the two photos. As she walked back toward the door to the convention hall, Hannah felt very virtuous for fulfilling her promise and letting Mike know what she'd just discovered. There was a line of waiting customers at Gary's booth, and once Hannah delivered the box with the sleighs and took one for herself, she went back to the cookie jar booth with Michelle's bar cookies. She would wait to talk to Gary until he finished with his customers. Michelle immediately cut up the bar cookies she'd brought, and since Norman was there to help wait on customers, Hannah grabbed a cup of coffee and took a moment to sit down at a table in the food court to sip it. She had just begun to relax when her cell phone rang. She glanced at the display and was surprised to see a number from Clarissa High displayed there. "Hello, this is Hannah," she answered.
"Oh, good. I got you. This is Lila from Clarissa High. I just thought of the name of Pinky's brother. Remember when I told you that it was a common name?"
"I remember," Hannah said.
"Well, it's Gary."
"Gary?"
"That's right. Or at least I'm pretty sure it is. He's the one who sold the farm and rented that apartment in town for Pinky."
There was a pause, and then Lila said,
"I've got to go. I've got another call. Goodbye, Hannah."
The phone clicked off, and Hannah just sat there for a moment with a puzzled expression on her face. Pinky's brother's name was Gary. She reminded herself that there were a lot of men named Gary in the world, and the fact that one of them had Pinky's Jeep didn't necessarily mean that her neighbor, Gary, was Pinky's brother. Actually, now that she thought about it, Lila had said that she was pretty sure, not completely sure. Gary had told her that his sister, Violet, had given him the Jeep. Violet could have bought it from a car lot. All this could be a coincidence. Things like that happened, didn't they? Hannah wiped down the counters of their booth for the sixth time as she waited for everyone to leave so that she could talk to Gary alone. Norman had gone home to shower and change clothes, and Michelle had gone off to Dick's bar to have a glass of wine and meet her friend, Trish, who was working the afternoon shift today. Trish would take Michelle to the cookie jar to get her car, and then all three of them, Norman, Trish, and Michelle, would meet at Hannah's condo at 7 to have leftover Chinese food and fresh pizza that Norman had promised to bring. There were only a few vendors left in the convention hall, and Hannah took heart. It wouldn't be long now. She told herself again that all she had was circumstantial evidence linking Gary to Pinky, and there really wasn't any reason to be overly suspicious. Even if Pinky's brother's name happened to be Gary, he might not be the Gary who'd been Pinky's brother. And even though Gary had told Hannah that everything Violet sold was handmade on consignment, and she'd found a label that said the cookie ornament Tracy had bought was made in China, that could have been Gary's mistake. Perhaps Violet had ordered the ornaments for a friend, or even for her personal Christmas tree at home, never intending to sell them at her shop. Actually, even the fact that Violet's name hadn't been on the patient list of any hospital or rehabilitation facility that they'd called could be explained. Violet could have been discharged before they'd called, and now she was at home, being cared for by her part-time assistant who worked at the store. Then, there was the fact that Violet's store, Many Hands, wasn't listed in the telephone directory or with the Better Business Bureau. This could also be easily explained. Violet could be following the lead of so many businesses and was using her cell phone number for business. And the fact that she wasn't listed with the Better Business Bureau wasn't that unusual either. If there had been no complaints about her business, Violet might not have chosen to pay to be listed with them. The last and final piece of circumstantial evidence could also be explained quite easily. Pinky's brother, whatever his name, could have sold Pinky's Jeep after she died. The car lot could have had it repainted black so that it would sell more easily, and Violet could have purchased it for Gary. Michelle had a used car, and they had no idea who the previous owner was, They hadn't even thought to ask Cyril. Most people who bought used cars checked the history of the car itself, but not the history of ownership. Everything Hannah had that pointed her to Gary as Pinky's brother was entirely circumstantial. The coffee Hannah had poured for herself before she'd cleaned out Sally's coffee pots was sitting in a large styrofoam cup on the counter. It was still almost full, and she picked it up and took a sip of the lukewarm brew while she waited. Finally, Gary's last customer left. Hannah knew that somehow she needed to trip Gary up and catch him in an outright lie. And she'd need proof of Gary's outright lie from Mike. Hannah used the app on her cell phone to record her upcoming conversation with Gary, picked up her coffee, and walked over to Gary's booth. "It was nice having you for a neighbor, Gary," she said, hoping to get him completely off guard for the probing questions she planned to ask. "And it was nice talking to you," Gary told her. "If you're ready to leave, I'll walk out to the parking lot."
"Thanks," Hannah said politely. "I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions, and it's too cold to talk outside."
"Ask away," Gary told her, shrugging into his parka and pulling on his winter driving gloves.
Hannah glanced at his gloves. They were black, padded leather gloves. "All the better to choke you with, my dear," the suspicious part of her mind cautioned. "You'd better be very careful now."
"Michelle and I felt sorry for your sister Violet, and we were going to send her some cookies."
Hannah gave him the excuse she'd rehearsed in her mind. "You didn't mention where she was hospitalized, so we called around, but we couldn't find her."
"When did you call?"
"Last night."
"That explains it," Gary said with a smile. "The doctor released Violet yesterday morning. She's home now."
"Oh, no wonder," Hannah pretended to believe him. "We also thought about sending cookies to her business address, but it's not listed with the Better Business Bureau."
"Violet never bothered to do that, and everyone's always been happy with anything they've gotten at her store."
"But she doesn't have a business phone, either."
"Sure she does. She uses her cell phone number. She had a landline for a while, but the only calls she got were from salesmen. Anything else you want to know, or can I leave for the cities now?"
"Back off," the rational part of Hannah's mind warned. "He's getting suspicious, and that's dangerous if he's the killer."
"Just one thing," Hannah told him, deciding to go for broke. "Why are you driving Pinky's Jeep?"
"Who?"
Gary asked, looking completely puzzled.
"Pinky. Her real name was Mary Jo Hart. Your Jeep was pink before you had it painted black."
The expression on Gary's face changed from slightly suspicious to icy cold and menacing.
"You think you got it all figured out, don't you, Hannah?"
"Maybe, maybe not," Hannah said quickly. "There is no Violet, is there, Gary?"
"Of course not," Gary admitted, giving her a hard look. "I heard you were a good detective, and it's true."
"Thank you," Hannah said quickly. "But there's still something I don't know. Did you drug that candy and send it to PK?"
"You bet I did. He ruined Mary Jo's life. She killed herself because of him. Did you know that?"
"I heard about her suicide. Did she get the pills from Dr. Benson?"
"Of course. She had some left, and I wanted PK to die the same way. It was only right. He killed her, you know. He made her crazy enough to take those tranquilizers and kill herself. It's the same as if he'd put a gun to her head and shot her."
"But weren't you afraid that Ross might get that candy instead of PK?"
"He was long gone. And even if there'd been some collateral damage, it didn't matter. I did it for Pinky. It's what PK deserved."
Hannah felt her mouth go suddenly dry as Gary leaned forward and glared at her.
"And now, you know too much."
"Don't worry," Hannah said quickly.
Everyone will understand why you did it. You were grief-stricken about Pinky. They'll understand.
Gary laughed. It was an insane laugh, almost hysterical, and Hannah knew she'd reached the end of the line. Then he sobered, and his eyes began to glitter with deadly intent.
This time, it won't be drugged candy. I'll be putting out your lights personally, and it'll be a real pleasure for me.
Hannah gasped as Gary reached down and picked up a large hammer, the kind that people in construction used for framing a house. Then he looked up with the most evil expression Hannah had ever seen.
Get out of here, both parts of her mind, the rational and the suspicious, warned her. He's going to kill you.
It was the first time that both parts of her mind had agreed about anything, but Hannah didn't waste time thinking about that. She raised her coffee cup and threw the contents straight into Gary's face, and then she whirled and ran toward the open door to the hallway as fast as she could. As she approached the doorway, Hannah heard a thud, but she didn't turn around to see what it was. She just kept on running, hoping that the splashed coffee had done its job and Gary had slipped and fallen. Hannah sprinted down the long hallway that separated the convention center from the main part of the inn. The hallway was dimly lit and completely deserted. Everyone else who'd worked at the convention hall had already left. The huge floor-to-ceiling windows on one side of the hallway looked out on the lake, and the other side had a lovely view of the pine forest. But Hannah had no time to appreciate the beauty of nature tonight, not when she was being chased by PK's killer. Hannah's eyes were focused straight ahead, scanning the carpet for any obstacles she might encounter in her headlong dash to the safety of the inn. And then she saw it in the distance, her goal, the open door that led into the restaurant. Panting heavily from the unaccustomed exertion, Hannah raced to the doorway and dashed through. Soft dining music was playing, but Hannah didn't hear it. Waiters and waitresses in stylish uniforms were serving their guests, but Hannah barely noticed them. Behind the plate glass windows in the front of the dining room, kitchen workers were busily stirring, pouring, and mixing the contents of various sized cooking pans over huge professional stoves. Hannah noticed none of it. She was too focused on saving her life. She was almost ready to drop from exhaustion when she spotted a table in the center of the room and recognized Bill and Andrea. She rushed toward them, too out of breath to shout, and grabbed the first thing she saw on their table, the silver cover that their waiter had just removed from Andrea's entree. Hannah turned to see Gary coming at her, the hammer raised high in his hand, and she jammed the silver entree cover into his face. Things happened very fast as the waiter stepped out of the way and Gary fell backwards to the floor, dropping the hammer as he clawed at the silver cover that was jammed over his face. Hannah grabbed the heavy hammer and hit the entree cover as hard as she could. Andrea gasped.
Hannah, what are you? Oh!
Cuff him, Hannah managed to gasp out, hammering away to keep Gary on his back on the floor.
Hurry! He killed PK!
Bill motioned to two of his off-duty deputies who were sitting at a neighboring table, and they sprang into action to flip Gary over on his stomach and cuff him. Bill relieved Hannah of the hammer and slipped an arm around her shoulders.
"He killed PK?" he asked her.
"Yes! He sent that drugged candy. I've got his whole confession on my phone."
"Deputies," Bill motioned to them, "does either one of you have a phone like Hannah's?"
"I do," one of them said, examining Hannah's phone. "Do you know how to send that taped confession to me?" Bill asked him.
"Sure. It's an app. I can do it right now if you want me to."
"Yes," Bill told him.
"There's an unsent text with photos. Do you want me to send that to?"
"That's up to Hannah," Bill turned to her. "Do you want him to send it?"
Hannah nodded, too shocked to speak. She hadn't sent the photos of Gary's car to Mike. No wonder he hadn't responded.
"Hannah?" Bill prompted her again.
"Yes, but it doesn't matter now," she managed to say, glancing at Gary, handcuffed, on the floor. "Everything turned out all right in the end." A moment or two later, the confession arrived on Bill's cell phone.
"Good work," he said, glancing at the display.
"Take him down to the station. Leave the cuffs on. Lock him up. Enter that hammer and entree cover into evidence, and I'll take it from there. And then come back here and have a nice dinner on me. Anything you want."
Once the deputies had left with their prisoner, Bill leaned down to kiss Andrea.
"Sorry about date night," he said. "I know you were looking forward to seeing that movie."
To Hannah's surprise, instead of looking disgruntled or disappointed, Andrea just laughed.
"It's okay, honey. I'm glad we both drove. Right now, all I want to do is go home and have a glass of wine. I've already had all the entertainment that I can handle for one date night."
Chapter 32. As Hannah took the familiar road home, she began to relax. PK's killer was behind bars, and now they could work on finding Ross's second storage locker. Except for missing Ross and wishing that he would come home, everything was back to normal again. They'd lucked out and caught PK's killer. The daily profits from selling cookies at Sally's convention had netted at least three times the daily profit they made at the cookie jar. And they had found one of Ross's storage lockers and rescued the contents before they'd gone up for public auction. On the whole, it had been a good outcome. And to cap it all off, Andrea wasn't even upset that Bill had cut their date night short. She'd been too busy laughing about the sight of Hannah straddling Gary and hammering away at the entree cover that was stuck on his face. Snow was gently falling as Hannah turned into her condo complex, used her key card to open the wooden slat that served as a gate, and drove down the pretty lane that led to her condo building. If Ross were here right now, they'd put on their parkas and walk down the path that led around the man-made lake inside the condo complex. They'd hold hands to keep warm, and they might even stop under one of the tall pines and share a kiss. As she imagined that kiss beneath the sheltering branches of the pine, a phrase popped into her mind. "It's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all." Would it have been better if she'd never seen Ross again and fallen in love with him? Or was it better to have experienced his love, even for such a short while? Hannah wasn't sure. All she knew was that she'd never felt so alone and abandoned. As she passed the guest parking lot, Hannah noticed Mike's car. And a little further down, she spotted Norman's car, too. She smiled. She might have known that Mike would be here. His food dar had probably told him the moment Norman had called to order the takeout pizza. Since neither Mike nor Norman had been sitting in their cars, Hannah continued to the end of the lane and drove down the ramp into the garage she shared with the other condo owners. Since Norman had a key, they must be inside. When she climbed up the covered staircase to her condo on the second floor, Hannah noticed that Moisha was perched on the living room windowsill. That was a good sign. It meant that the Robovac hadn't tired him out too much today. She waved at him, and to her delight, he raised his paw to wave back. Hannah unlocked the door, braced herself, and pushed it open. Moisha hurtled out, just as she'd anticipated, and landed in her outstretched arms. And then he did something new, something he'd never done before. He extended his paws, claws retracted, and patted both of her cheeks at once.
"That's sweet," Hannah said, smiling at him.
And then, just as she was about to step inside, Moisha licked her cheeks with his rough tongue and started to purr. Hannah hugged him to show that the feeling was mutual and carried him inside. She placed him on the back of the couch in his favorite spot and rubbed the base of his ears. Only then did she turn to greet Norman and Mike. "Hi, guys," she said, still smiling from Moisha's unexpected show of affection. Mike nodded to acknowledge her presence, and then he said,
"Sit down, Hannah."
Alarm bells clanged in Hannah's mind.
and she hurried to sit down on the sofa. Norman took the seat next to her, and she was glad he was here. Mike had used his command voice, and that meant something was happening. "What's wrong?" she asked him.
"We found Ross," Mike told her. His voice was flat, and that didn't bode well. "It's bad news, Hannah."
Hannah could feel her tightly controlled composure slip alarmingly. "Is he..." She stopped to swallow, her throat suddenly dry. "Is he dead?" She managed to force out the word.
"No."
Hannah drew a deep breath of relief, but then another dreadful possibility occurred to her. "Injured?"
"No. He's perfectly okay."
Hannah started to smile, but Mike wasn't smiling, and neither was Norman. That left her completely puzzled, and her fear began to build again. But if Ross isn't dead or injured, why did you tell me that it was bad news? Mike nodded to Norman, and Norman sighed.
"Mike meant that it's not bad for Ross, but it is bad news for you, Hannah."
"What, Mike needs an interpreter?" Hannah felt her irritation grow by leaps and bounds. Getting bad news should be like ripping off a Band-Aid. If you dragged it out, it hurt more than if you gritted your teeth and yanked it off quickly. She turned to look directly at Mike. "What is it, Mike?"
"Well, Hannah..." Mike winced slightly. "I'm not quite sure how to tell you this."
"Just spit it out, Mike." Hannah's irritation took wings. "Don't drag it out. Tell me." Norman reached out for her hand, and even though she had the urge to yank it back, Hannah let him hold it. She knew that Norman was only trying to help her get through whatever it was that Mike was about to tell her.
"It's like this, Hannah."
Mike stopped, and an expression of pain crossed his face.
"The reason Ross left you is because..."
Mike took a deep breath and let it out again.
"Ross went back to his wife."
Hannah shut her eyes. Of course she was dreaming. She must be dreaming. It had to be another crazy nightmare like Florence and the oranges and the perfect pear and... But she could feel Norman holding her hand. She could actually feel it. And Michelle wasn't baking because Michelle wasn't here. She had to wake up somehow. This couldn't be happening to her. It didn't make sense. It was a dream, and she had to open her eyes and wake up. Through a supreme effort of will she hadn't known she possessed, Hannah managed to open her eyes. But they had been open all along, hadn't they? There were tears on her face, and they were falling from her eyes. Was it raining in her living room? That's where she was. She could see it. She was sitting on the couch, and Norman was holding her hand, and her whole face was wet. It must be raining. And that meant this was just another crazy dream. What did you say? Hannah asked Mike.
I said, Ross went back to his wife, Mike repeated.
Oh, yes, Hannah decided this was definitely a dream, because that was crazy. She had to tell Mike she knew that she was dreaming. Then she would wake up from this nightmare. That's not right, she said. It's just not right, Mike. It makes no sense at all. Ross couldn't go back to his wife, because... I'm his wife.
Hannah, please listen to me and try to understand.
An expression of sympathy crossed Mike's face, and for one brief moment Hannah thought she saw unshed tears in his eyes.
Hannah, you're not married. Ross was never your husband. He's married to someone else.
The End. This book was read for you by Suzanne Torin, a member of SAG-AFTRA. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Raspberry Danish Murder,
by Joanne Fluke. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold, including Audible.com, Audiobooks.com, Apple iTunes, and in public libraries through RB Digital. Thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.